Loading in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It's the cure for the common restaurant. Expert interviews, tools, and tips to get you the restaurant you know it can be. Now, here is your host, Donald Burns, the Restaurant Coach.
And welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. This is episode 45, and today I am joined by my good friend, restaurateur and wine god, and plus, I have to say, probably the happiest man I know, Brian Duncan. But before we jump into the conversation, let's talk a little bit about potential, specifically your potential. See, the number one thing that will change your restaurant, change your life, change your money, change your relationships, is you must raise your standards. Your restaurant and your life right now is a reflection of what you tolerate. Plain and simple. Now, are you happy with that? If yes, that's great. But if you're not, you have to raise your standards and then keep them up there. We all start out when we open a restaurant with high standards. And then as we kind of get beat down from life and those negative energy vampires, we slowly start to lower our standards until we lose who we are and what we stand for. We compromise and we sell out. Well, it's time to take it all back. Time to get the restaurant and the life you know you're capable of. Time to turn all those things that you know you should do into a must. And you know what I'm talking about. You know, you should work out. You should eat better. You should get more sleep. You should cost out your menu. You should fire that low performer on your team. You should and should and should all over yourself every single day. It's time to stop shooting all on yourself and start doing. You know that you should work on your business instead of in your business. So how exactly do you do that? It starts with a conversation. Go to my website at www.therestaurantcoach.com and schedule a call with me personally. I want to help you. We're going to discuss where your restaurant is now, where you want to be in the next 90 days, and I'm going to give you a crystal clear plan and path to get it all. You just need to take a little action and schedule that call. So now let's jump into the conversation with Brian Duncan. And what is your superpower to getting the restaurant that you want? And joining me today on the Restaurant Coach Podcast is wine guru, good friend, and restaurateur, Brian Duncan from Chicago. Brian, how are you today?
I am outstanding, Donald. It's great always to connect with you.
Always.
Probably a little warmer where you are than where I am, but that's the way things are.
Man, I don't know how you do it in Chicago, man. I lived in Chicago for 5 years, and that is cold. I mean, cold.
Yeah, it seems this winter is a little longer. Started early.
I know. It's always sad when it's like, oh, it's just going to drag on for months and months and months. Yeah.
We learn to layer.
That is true. That is the key to surviving in Chicago is to layer. You have to layer effectively and have a good collection of scarves and hats and earmuffs and
all
gloves.
All that stuff.
Yeah, everything.
All of the above.
Well, hey, I wanted to have you back on the show because, number one, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Number two, we're heading back to Madrid in February, aren't we?
I know. That's the shining light in my the middle of my winter. It won't be able to come any sooner as far as I'm concerned.
I'm so excited. Yeah, we're heading back again. You know, Brian, if you don't know, was a part of my Team USA last year. Last year I was invited to bring together some speakers from the United States and kind of, give kind of our view of, you know, what's going on with trends and restaurants and culture and leadership from the United States. And it went so well that they invited me back again this year, and I could actually bring more speakers from the U.S. So we assembled
more
a great
crew.
Team, more crew, more, just more. It's going to be awesome. And, last year, Brian did a presentation. And I have to say, it really touched a lot of people because you referenced, a lot of your superpowers that we all have. And for those who didn't make it to Spain, why don't you give them a little recap of what superpowers you feel we have as leaders in the hospitality industry?
Well, the our main superpower is our humanity. This innate, we're born with this. How we distribute it and how we share it is what really makes the biggest difference. At the core of that word is humane. There are other words that sort of leap from that, things like benevolence and compassion. And there's so many connections. I like word origins and the history of words, and it gives you a foundation, or I think a much more clarity when we think about the business. I did a lot of research in the very beginning, thinking about the word restaurant and hospitality. Mm-hmm. And hospitality's root is hospitus and hospital. Those words come from that, which means caring for. So our industry cannot divorce itself if it wants to establish itself and have a future that's not based on an understanding of the firm foundation that it comes from. So if at the core of the hospitality industry, our humanity is where you really begin, because you don't have the inkling or the desire to care for the needs of other people. Mm-hmm. On any number of levels, we're talking, whether it's restaurants, resorts, customer service, business culture, all of it has to come out of our humanity. So your humanity and the ability to dispense humanely is at our core. What as leaders, we have to establish that in our businesses as a leader, but as the core foundation and root of our business culture. And you have a business culture, whether you realize it or not, or whether it's good or not, or whether you like it or not. But a healthy business culture is something that people within your organization and outside of it, if they ever come in contact or interact with it, they have an opinion of it. And a healthy culture is something that bears good fruit. If you have a garden, I think I used the vineyard as a, mm-hmm. as sort of a jumping off point. Right. And when you talk about farming and vineyards, you want there to be healthy soil, great microbial life in there. You want the vineyard itself to be alive. You don't want to have chemicals that destroy the lifeblood of the environment or the ecosystem. And so at the core of our industry, I felt that we have a huge opportunity not only to maintain the principles and philosophies of hospitality, mm-hmm. but I think no one is better positioned than the hospitality industry to make this world at large a better place. And it certainly starts with how we treat one another. And so when I began to think about my presentation last year, so many things became really prominent for me. The very first recorded restaurant that you ever read about if you search history was created by a gentleman named Boulanger in France near the River Seine. And he made healthy broths, vegetable-based and meat-based broth that was supposedly restorative to people's stomach. And he's known for kind of being a bit of a, he liked to quote the Bible, and he would say that his soups were in and of themselves restorative, and it's a reference to a Bible verse. I think his motto was, "Come to me, all who suffer from pain of the stomach, and I'll restore you." And it's sort of parallel to the scripture that, "Come unto me, all who are labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Mm-hmm. And wrapped around that whole idea is one human being caring for another, a sort of a resting place. And so understanding and holding on to the principles of hospitality through your humanity allows you to look for ways to meet the needs of others. And when you think about it that way, and I know probably most people have never heard that background sort of explanation of why those words, restaurant, hospitality, and all of those things, what their root are. But they're based on some very basic human principles about treating one another better. And so that's powerful to me. And then I'd say humanity is your superpower, because all of the gifts that you have to dispense hospitality and to operate in this universe, those things are refined by your interaction with other people. And so it's your humility is your real strength, which is totally counterculture. I think when we think about how we're socialized, especially in the business world, aggression and sort of beat the other guy to the punch, right, and the early bird gets the worm and all of those things. I always say that the early bird may get the worm, but I prefer the fish. everybody has their own sort of method about how to go about getting there first. But that was kind of the gist, was talking about how to your perspective, and what a powerful tool your perspective is. That's a real superpower, because it gives you the ability to look at circumstances, especially a set of negative circumstances or problems, and actually readjust. And so it was somewhat prophetic in the way I'm thinking about it now, because the model has changed, and the model is changing very quickly with technology and artificial intelligence, and many of the tools that we use are moving quicker than our ability to regulate them. And so a lot of things that we're doing out of convenience, and in some cases at our own peril. And I'm sure, you know, we'll get into some of that, but if we don't lose our humanity, then we don't lose the foundation of the reason why we're even doing what we're doing. And when we do that, we are becoming machines.
That's true. It's kind of crazy. The AI is just like, I mean, leaps and bounds of what it was. I remember I was speaking at the Florida restaurant show, and I saw a booth, and they had menu boards that actually had facial recognition. And then it would actually tell you, you just walk up to the thing, it would tell you pretty much, and it was pretty accurate. It would say what age you were, you know, and the thing was, it would start recording your facial imprint. And so like, if I came back to that restaurant, it would start flashing stuff on the menu boards, digital menu boards, that would be geared to make me buy. Like, you know, if four guys came into the restaurant and walked to the menu boards, it would automatically say four guys, and it would have a program designed to show things on the menu boards that would stimulate, you know, for those guys to buy, like beers or appetizers. It was amazing how crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's odd. You know, I just got a new phone, and it's doing the facial recognition thing. And I was having a conversation with a colleague today, and I had disabled Siri on my previous phone. And with the new phone, somehow it was on automatically, and she joined our conversation.
Yeah.
Unsolicited.
She's always listening.
I thought it was off. Yeah.
It's like, so you're never alone nowadays with your phone. You know, Siri's like always there.
Yeah. So yeah. We are not alone.
We are not. So what? So, you know, this, I was going to say, you know, from the last year we went to Madrid to next year, I mean, there's been such rapid changes in the restaurant industry in the United States.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. What do you think is one thing that's critical for long-term success for restaurants heading into 2020?
For me, it's always been the same. I just started a teaching consulting for a very, very wonderful restaurant here. And I'm doing wine training for the staff. And my big preach is people can go eat and drink everywhere, anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But will they make a connection that will compel them to return?
Exactly.
And the connection isn't the technology. It's not the menu. It's not even the food.
Nope.
If you don't somehow make a human connection, I feel like I'm this prophet. I really am trying to get people to understand that machines cannot do. They can dispense service, but not hospitality.
Exactly.
And so I'm constantly reminded, because we it's very easy to get consumed. I get excited. I'm not anti-technology, but I again, that word perspective. How do we keep ourselves from allowing the technology to move us outside of our humanity? Right. And how do we teach a generation or two of people who have only been raised on these devices, how to maintain and enrich their human interaction?
Exactly.
Before we begin to, because I see a shaving away of some of the niceties and some of the connections that you would naturally make, because we spend now, everybody's got their face in their phone. And they're always in our hand. And I see people at dinner, families at dinner, but everybody's got a device, including the 2-year-old. So I wonder what they're going to be like when they grow up. It's really interesting. So it's the connection, Donald, for the longest-winded answer. Being recognized, human beings want to be recognized.
Exactly.
And not just to a computer that they walk up to, like your experience that you were sharing, but genuinely feel the sense that they're cared for, they're acknowledged, and somebody is interested in their experience.
I think one of the things that restaurants could really have to focus on for 2020 is soft skills, you know, training soft skills.
Yes, that definitely. Having conversations. One of the things that I'm really working on is the language of wine. I mean, I've dealt with one of the more difficult products to make approachable to people, because it is so vast and has all these kinds of historical legacies, and it has this elitist cachet sort of attached to it even still. And there are always another generation to kind of you want to introduce, but we still have a lot of work to do in that area. So I really felt like I believe this very profoundly, and I learned this in my years of running restaurants, was that it's very easy to make something difficult, and it's very difficult to make something easy.
Yes.
And when you can, first of all, one of my tools is to get to who the individual is that I'm training. I want to know about them as a person, you know, what kinds of things are interesting to them. And that becomes relatable in the group dynamic. So people discover things about one another that they didn't know. And it enriches your appreciation for that person. And I do that every time, because it changes the playing field. And you can build a sort of unanimous environment, you know, something that we do as a group, as opposed to independent contractors in a business setting. And you can feel that disconnection when it's not cohesive, because people can learn to actually like one another if they have some sense of respect or understanding where people have come from or what they're contributing.
Exactly.
So it's a very vital thing to have and take interest in other people. Genuine. And that was the other thing, was connection and authenticity. If I could have like a subgroup under the authenticity. One of my rules is you never BS a client, you know, when they're asking, or guests when in the restaurant. You don't just flip off an answer for convenience. Especially with food allergies and all of those kinds of things. It's okay to say, I don't know, and let me go find someone who can answer that right now. And you're absolutely golden in the eyes of the guests. So.
Yeah, I'm going to circle back to your, you know, make it simple versus complex. It reminded me of a quote from Steve Jobs, and this is one of his quotes. It says, that's been one of my mantras, focus and simplicity Simple can be harder than complex. You have to work hard to get your thinking clean to make it simple.
Yes. It takes some real effort. I like building and creating concepts in my mind. I'm constantly coming up, you know, with different twists. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons my first restaurant, Ben 36, was born out of my frustration with the restaurant model. I say this now, the restaurant model is broken.
Yes.
It's definitely broken, and it's been broken. And I was trying to break it and reshape it way back then because I did not like the way that wine was trotted out along with the dining experience. Mm-hmm. And I spent several years just kind of creating a punch list of all the things I hated about interacting with wine and food in restaurants. And that's how I created my concept. So it was, I guess a lot of people, and I didn't really realize it till later, people say if you want a successful business, solve a problem. Come up with a solution. So that's what literally we did for every aspect of that restaurant, from the physical, the layout, the floor plans, the textures, the fabrics, all of it, everything, the language that was used, all of that had to be mm-hmm. considered to take a product that most people found difficult or were nervous around. Because they felt like they were going to make a mistake or mispronounce or all those things. We addressed each and every one of those issues so that we could make wine, heaven forbid, fun. And so I took what looked like a restaurant, but I turned it into stretched it and turned it into the sort of this hybrid of a market and a restaurant and a wine bar and a cheese bar all under one roof. And this came up with this adult playground for food and wine. And people were having fun there, but the model is broken. But when I say it's broken, I mean it has the opportunity built in for it to be reshaped to reflect where we're going as a culture and a society. So rather than looking at it so much as problems, I'm trying to figure out now how these new challenges can be made into new experiences. Exactly. So somebody's going to figure it out. And I feel like we're being tugged on the technology side, and the math doesn't work. The business math doesn't work. The formulas change dramatically, and I know, I'm sure we'll talk about some of that. But what I see is anytime there's change, there's opportunity to make it better and different.
Exactly.
Because some of it isn't appealing at all to me.
The numbers don't work, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, a lot of people don't know that actually that's I first met you at Ben 36 back in the early 2000s when I used to work for Wolfgang Puck in Chicago. And Ben 36 was at the forefront, cutting edge, again, of a new business model. And it was an amazing restaurant. And it was great to see you interact with people there.
The fun part of it was that every night, and I think this is very rare, I don't think there are many businesses that you can see the immediate effects or the immediate product or of a decision that you made, literally, you know, just an hour or hours before. The restaurant business has that inherent in it where I can make a change. I can tell the staff to tell the guests certain things, or we can go about serving something a different way or presenting something a different way, and you get an immediate reaction. So that's stimulating for somebody like me, because I'm not the most patient person in the world. But if you're a teacher, you get to see your student maybe 20 years later and to see, you know, what they may turn out to be. But I can see, put a smile on somebody's face in a very short amount of time.
So let me ask you a question. If you had to start over with one restaurant concept, what would it be and what city would you start it in?
The only city in the United States that really appeals to me in terms of like my whole complete life would be Austin, Texas. I like deal. I love the energy. And it seems the audience is very energetic, wide open to diversity of styles and concepts. They seem to really embrace life on so many different levels. Some of the greatest music venues and jazz venues I've had the pleasure to experience. And so it's a lot warmer than it is here. Chicago's my home, so that's already been fulfilled. The city really embraced my concept, my restaurant, and mm-hmm. my restaurant family, the people that worked with us. There's nothing that I don't think that could be more satisfying than to have your hometown embrace you that way. It's been really great. Concept wise, I've toyed around with something a little bit more intimate in terms of I still want to do a bit of a hybrid with kind of a retail presence mm-hmm. that has a very nice cheese program and those kinds of things mm-hmm. that people can buy, an impulse or, you know, for special occasion or whatever. And it would be the kind of place that you could, you know, plan your wedding wine and plan for, you know, corporate events. And we would have sort of like a concierge there that would help you put all those pieces together. And then a separate entrance attached where it would be more, I call them like, I don't know, like parlors or salons, smaller rooms for more intimacy mm-hmm. and food stations. Kind of a mixture. I love shellfish. So there'd be a shellfish station. There'd be a charcuterie area. And then a very large area for roasting and grilling.
Oh, nice.
And so the focus would be on, I love in Spain, I remember the El Maison where we went and we had the best lamb
awesome.
that I've ever eaten in my life. Where it's not a lot of sauces and foams and stuff. It's a really great product.
Yeah,
presented simply.
Home cooking.
Yeah. And the one element that I really, the twist on it would be in terms of the wine program, mm-hmm. Nightly, a smaller list, if you will, unless you wanted to bring something from the retail area. But what we would really do is focus on opening great bottles of wine. There'd be a range of prices, but mm-hmm. everything would be open. And it would be not changing literally daily. And just stuff that we found that maybe there's a limited amount of supply or something that's special that most individuals could never get their hands on. Mm-hmm. But just give, you know, unique, special opportunities for them to I hated the preciousness around wines and sort of the reserved list kind of thing. So I went to a restaurant in Florence many, many years ago. There's Cibreo and then Cibreo Cafe. And they're right across the street from one another. Have you ever been there?
No, never.
Well, what I realized once I sat down, it was very small. There were maybe seven tables. And I noticed that, they came and put a glass of Spumante in front of me, and then a gentleman in a very nice suit came and sat down at the table mm-hmm. next to me with four people sitting there, and he basically verbalized the entire menu.
Oh.
And when it came my turn, he came over and told me what was available, and I said, well, I want to do those first four or five things and then pair a different glass of wine with each one, and then I'll tell you when I'm too full to eat anymore.
Right.
And then what I noticed was them running across the street with glasses of wines to the other restaurant and then plates of food. And I realized that I was on the garmanger side and then the main kitchen was on the other side. And I was thinking only in Italy. But I kind of like that idea of someone bringing things straight from like the grill or from the charcuterie or the cheese area and having a wine that they're really excited about. The bottle's already open and they pour it and we just, you know, basically charge you for what you have, but that was more personal and custom designed and just intimate.
Now you got me thinking about all the great food we had in Madrid. My mouth's starting to, I'm starting to.
I have those dreams quite frequently. quite frequently. But it's the experience that I'm so awesome. That was just the way he cooked for us, and he took care. We didn't have to think about anything, and I think that there's a place for that. I think there's room in that, in whatever you know, this new concept that I was thinking of doing. There's room for, you know, private areas and things like that. But I'm really into this idea of this intimate kind of interaction and somebody coming to your table and really going the whole distance with you.
That'd be awesome. So speaking about new concepts, what do you think about this kind of rise of the ghost kitchen?
So now we're going into evolution. This is evolution. This is the stuff that makes me just a little bit nervous, because you're talking about food not being sort of coming from the hands that made it to the table. Now we're thinking about food traveling and storing food and transporting food, and it's creating all kinds of issues. From what I understand, are we losing that immediacy? Are we sacrificing something? I mean, that bleeds into the whole delivery or food pickup and all that kind of stuff too. I guess, you know, it has its benefits. What I'm concerned about is the influence that it's having on independence. I'm seeing a decrease in the ability of independent restaurants to survive in this new sort of map.
Right.
The lease spaces, the spaces are really expensive. You know, it seems like shared costs in restaurant groups, larger restaurant groups, food halls are the only ones, multi-unit places that are the only ones that can sort of survive. So, you know, the ghost kitchen part of it, in some cases, I think it's really smart, depending on the kind of business that you have. But a lot of brands are beginning to, you shared an article with me, and I was reading this article about how there's this, everything's be kind of either partnering or being swallowed up.
Yep.
And no, so you have a brand that sort of attaches itself to another brand. And what scares me, I guess, is what I'm struggling to really express, is that the creativity, the individualism is, I think, being lost. And the driver is survival. it's almost like we're losing the culture of the artist and the culture of the creator for survival, just like we're losing our privacy for convenience in with relationship to technology. There's a price to pay for having to chase those costs and being based on survival, because then you do things that you normally would not have done, and what gets lost is your original intent. I don't know that that's stimulating for somebody coming up with a passion for the industry, that it's almost like you just become a factory worker.
Yes.
And it loses the creative vehicle in some ways. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the rise of the ghost kitchen, much like a kind of our classes, you know, the middle class is basically, you know, eroding away. I think ghost kitchens are going to do is it's going to force out those kind of middle restaurants. It's either going to be cheap food delivered, or it's going to be high end, you know, and the stuff in the middle, unfortunately, is going to be kind of pushed out.
Yeah. The mom and pop sort of neighborhood and bistro style restaurant is happening everywhere. If people aren't seeing it, they should notice. There's a lot of empty retail space. There's a lot of entry restaurant space in this town. And when I travel, I see it. I don't think people want to talk about it, but it's happening. And you and I were talking about this, you know, this last year about the ability to survive as an independent with the math being the way that it is. So, you know, the other side of it is that there are so many restaurants that are open, but they're not lasting as long as, you know, as they used to. 6 months and a year now.
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
At least, and they're not bad places. I mean, they're places with great food, but there's either too many of them, but too many of them that can't make it. And the other one that is interesting to me is Time Out. Magazine has opened a very large food hall here. And it just dawned on me the other day that their business, the media business, is in trouble. So they're diversifying and investing in real estate now, because that's exactly what they are. They're real estate people, and they're housing the same restaurants that they're reviewing. And I'm saying to somebody, well, isn't that called a conflict of interest? I mean, are they picking winners and losers? So there's a lot.
Hedging their bets, I bet.
Well, stuff is happening. I guess to my point is everything is happening so fast, people are like grabbing for lifelines.
You know? Yes, they are.
Everybody's trying to stay afloat. And it's not just the restaurant business. Look at the Amazoning of products in general.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, because of convenience, our supermarkets, all of these things are changing and everything's being consolidated. I think I had mentioned about a year or so ago that by this time next year, over 50% of the vineyard land in the United States will be corporately owned.
Oh, wow.
And that should send shivers up and down everyone's spine, because once it goes corporate, it never goes back to the family.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think of mass production, when it comes to something and wine and globalization and all of that kind of stuff, we're already there. We're already there because it's a perfect storm. The families have been in the business, and the parents are getting older, and the children aren't wanting to go into the business or maintain it. They come around with the companies don't build anything but buy brands as opposed to establishing them, pay them more money than they can refuse, and it's a perfect storm. So,
exactly. Which brings me to another perfect storm. Third-party delivery. You think it's helping or hurting?
I don't. If they do the math at the end of the day, I think it's kind of breaking even almost. Here's the other variables. You're losing a visit or more from someone who would come in and have the experience where all the money stays in your house.
Right.
It's costing you for these third-party systems, and you also, this is the dangerous one, I think, in my opinion, is you are putting your reputation in the hands of someone who you do not manage, who isn't adhering to your standards of service. So the chance of you taking a hit unwarranted, because as soon as the food left your hands, it was in somebody who wasn't a hospitalitarian. They were just getting it there and getting through the night. Your reputation could suffer. I've seen an awful lot of data that shows, again, we're at the stage of survival.
Yes.
So people jumped into that third-party delivery. I think it was in an article I was reading, the one you sent me was on Panera Bread, who invested something like $100 million two, three, 4 years before taking on any third party. And they've taken on the third party deliverers, but they've made money with their own.
Right.
But they think that there's a net, there's another audience out there who doesn't use their deliveries in certain markets. So they ended up having to go with them anyway, just to sort of keep up. So it's, again, does all food really travel well?
No,
is everybody
God, no.
set up?
To, oh, God,
I mean, is, aren't we? Aren't we altering? There was a ramen noodle shop that refused even to let you take stuff. They didn't even have to go containers, and they had to ultimately adjust.
They gave in. Yeah, they had to give in.
They gave in. Yeah, because they were missing that much of the market. So, you know, so I think we get very caught up with things changing and thinking but not everything is progress.
No,
so we have to kind of iron out. Yeah, we have to iron out these things, and everybody kind of jumps on and wants to be first. But there are some issues here. I just think the speed that everything is happening that's what's really different. We used to be able to project. Now it's kind of anybody's guess. Because, for instance, if I'm going to put in vines, next year I'm not going to know whether or not it was a good decision for me to plant Syrah in the area that I chose. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take me 6, 7, 8 years before I know whether I've got something that I can really, really market. Here, it's like we're just throwing spaghetti at the wall to try to keep up. It's again, I'm back to that word survival.
So, we are.
Hang on to your hat.
Yeah, I think 2020 is going to be a very rocky year for a lot of restaurants.
Yeah. I've heard the word bloodbath thrown around quite frequently. And it feels badly. You know, you don't want to be the one that's saying it. But somebody needs to be the canary in the coal mine, so to speak. And so that we have these discussions. And that's the other reason I love HIP, because we're talking about innovation. We're talking about the future. And I like talking about the future. The past was to fortify me, to give me a foundation to stand firmly in. Looking ahead, my eyes are for seeing where I'm going. And that's why I love participating, because when you can hear a perspective that's, you know, hundreds and thousands of miles away, and you find out what things really are, you have in common, and then what kind of subtleties or variables that kind of wake you up to maybe see something you didn't see. The wealth of knowledge and experience that you come away with from a gathering like that is, I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. It is an amazing. I told everyone when I told you and I told Kelly and I told Andrew, I said, you're never going to, this is like one of a kind event. You're going to be just be blown away.
Yeah. You told me, I think your exact words once was, this is going to spoil you for every, every conference you ever participate in. Ava in the future, and you were absolutely right.
Ava Ballarin, we gotta give props to Ava Ballarin. She runs a first class Congress over there, the Congress Hospitality
Absolutely
Congress.
Absolutely no first question.
Class,
absolutely
all
no
the
question.
Way.
And it just the people that the network of people that you come in contact with is really just phenomenal. I'm so honored to be a part of it the first year, and this year even more so.
Awesome.
I just really, really appreciate the invitation to be a part of it and to contribute.
So, hey, I'm really big on self-care. So what's one self-care ritual that you do daily?
Oh, you know, I'm a prayer. Morning prayer is my foundation for I like the wee hours of the morning to begin with anyway. I love the silence, and I don't like my days to happen to me. So the only way for me to get ahead of it is that quiet time. And in my, you know, and really committing myself daily, it's no more than saying I'm here for a purpose. You know, but may I be sensitive in every circumstance, because you know my life's purpose is extended to other people. I'm not here for me. We're not really supposed to be here for one another. We're not here for ourselves. We're here because we all have some things that we're supposed to be in the earth to share. So prayer for me in the morning sets me up with an expectation that I'm going to have encounters that are going to enrich my life and that I'll have something to share.
What time do you typically get up in the morning?
I usually wake up between 3:40 and 4 something.
Wow, you get up real
early. And yeah, and then I'm up and out of bed by 6:30. But and I get in a good hour, you know, in that quiet time. Uh-huh. And I've never been one that could just sleep all the way through into 10 and noon. And, you know, I have to get up, and then I can go back to bed and then get in another hour or two. And that works for me.
What time you normally go to bed at night?
I try to do it by like 9:30 at the latest.
That's good, that's good.
I don't keep restaurant hours anymore. So I had
changes.
Plenty of years of 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and then I was up at 7. That math doesn't work too well, but that was the clock that I was on. Open 365 days, 4 restaurants at one point. When I slowed down, I finally realized that I didn't have to be doing something every single second, that I could actually be alone with my thoughts. I can read now. I can pace myself. I've worked a lot of years to get to the point where I could, you know, go to find balance.
Exactly.
But I was busy trying to realize my dreams come true, and I didn't have time to stop and look back. I just wanted to be mm-hmm. present in every moment. Donald, you know me very well. I'm the most blessed guy that I know.
You are. And the happiest guy.
The challenges. Yeah, and the challenges were there for me to grow. You don't get to graduate unless you get tested. So all the problems, all the issues, you adjust your perspective. You see problems as opportunities, as mm-hmm. potential projects to solve. And it changes the way you approach life. It changes the way you interact with people. And you're able to encourage people rather than bring people down with issues. And it's just a perspective issue. That's why I love the intersection of the new decade and the new year being 2020. It's just mm-hmm. so apropos and exciting to me. So I'm excited to see where things are going and hopefully be a part of the conversation.
It's going to be awesome. All right, I'm going to throw you one last curveball question here, okay?
All right.
If you could have lived in any time period, what would it have been and what would you have wanted to be?
Any time period. I'm going to screw around with you on this one. I believe that human beings are only born for their time that they're needed the most in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you meet people by accident. I don't think we arrived here willy nilly at random.
Nice.
I don't believe in randomness. I think I've said that to you before.
Yes.
So not only do I believe that we all have purpose, but the time that we're supposed to release into the world, what it is that we're going to contribute was timed. So one of the biggest revelations of that for me was thinking about the people who are difficult, that have been difficult in my life, or that came across my pathway that I didn't particularly care for, they didn't like me, or whatever. For some reason, we think only give value to the people who we like. Like we don't think that there's anything to garner or to learn or to benefit from mm-hmm. somebody who we don't really care for. And some of those people are holding the most valuable tool for you to accomplish your next assignment and for your personal growth. So I got a visual, and here's how it goes. It's if you really want to get the most valuable tool, sometimes you're going to have to reach across a fence. And that's two words, the letter A and the word fence. You're going to have to reach across the fence, and or you're going to have to get over offense, O-F-F-E-N.
Ooh, that's good.
You see? It's like came to me one day. Like, we're so easily offended now. Have you noticed that in the last decade?
Oh, my
like
God,
everybody's,
yes.
like they're giving a reward away for who can be the most offended.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, if you could just be quiet long enough to hear what someone says, sometimes criticism is a correction that you could use. Like, have you even considered it's possible that the way you behave and project is not maybe the best, or if someone has another perspective, to use one of my favorite words, or an approach. And if you are using that person's personality or the difficulty of their personality not to learn from them, you've missed the tool.
Exactly.
And you can't really build necessarily. You don't graduate to that next level in building, your purpose and fulfilling your purpose. So to me, that's been a very powerful trajectory for me in my thinking, now that I have time enough to slow down. I feel like times I used to tell people I would pass myself in the airport and I didn't have time to say hello. And I don't think that's the worst kind of life to live, but it's challenging. I don't know if you're stopping and smelling very many roses, but my nostrils are clear now.
Yeah.
And the world smells good to me.
Yeah, I structure my work now more in spurts. So I'll do 3 weeks, pretty heavy, intense, a lot of traveling, a lot of working one-on-ones. And then I'll take a week to kind of, just chill at home and work on content and work on new stuff. And, it works best for me.
Yeah, I love that. I found that for me too, variety is I have all my clients are different now. I have, retail client, restaurant client, corporate clients. And so my hats are different and the approach is slightly different with each one, the conversation. But it's not done with the same level of intensity playing beat the clock. I don't have that hanging over the top of my head now. So
awesome. Well, Brian, always a pleasure talking to you, my friend.
Oh, my pleasure. All mine.
If people want to get a hold of you, what's your, do you have a website?
Yeah, it's gowinebrian.com.
Gowinebrian.com.
G-O-W-I-N-E. Mm-hmm. Go.winebrian.com.
Awesome. And if you haven't checked out Go Wine, you should go check out. It's a great resource, by the way.
A lot of information, a lot of useful tools.
Tons of information.
Perspective, profiles.
Yes, I'll put a link into the show notes for people. Yeah, tons of stuff. Yeah, a lot of my blog posts have been featured on there too. So you guys are always great about putting out great content all the time.
You've always got incredible perspective and content.
Thank you, my friend.
We learn from one another.
Yes, we do. That's another thing too. Surround yourself with people that motivate you and inspire you to become better. That's my motto.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's why I consider you a dear friend, Brian.
Donald, you're the best. You are.
Thank you
the
so
best.
Much. And I look forward to seeing you in Madrid in February.
Won't be long.
All right,
my friend.
Hey, happy holidays to you, okay?
Happy holidays to you. Thank you again, and look forward to seeing you.
You too, my friend.
Right. Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Coach Podcast with Donald Burns. Tune in next time as we serve up more ways to maximize your potential. Visit our website at www.therestaurantcoach.com or download episodes at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify.